Good afternoon, everyone. It's Dr. Nigro again with another edition of Psychology Unplugged. As always, thank you to everyone who's reached out to me through Psychology Today, through PsychologyUnpluggedOutlook.com, and also kind of reaching a worldwide audience, which is something that I wasn't expecting as I embarked on this journey. But the platform that I use to upload these podcasts, the grace of God, we're targeting a worldwide audience. Last week, I focused on the beginning of personality and personality pathology and disorders. But today, I wanted to focus on the pandemic and its impact on mental health. I want to start with a personal retrospective of how, I guess, as an individual, I was introduced to this. This was back in March of 2020. My wife and I had driven back from Massachusetts back home to where I'm from in Chicago to be with my dad, who unfortunately wasn't responding to chemotherapy for a rare form of bile duct cancer. And my father, I lost my mother. Suddenly my father was not only my dad, my best friend. And it was on the TV screen talking about coronavirus and didn't really know much about what it was. It was kind of in the backdrop, and it was joining time with my dad. But my family is in law enforcement back in Chicago. And I remember going to the grocery store, and it was surreal. It was kind of like out of a movie. People were grabbing stuff, and this was prior to wearing masks and everything. But and there were signs up like 5 cans of canned goods, 1 thing of produce, and still can't figure out the toilet paper thing. But I do stock up every week just in case we go down that road again. But I spent a good time with my dad, and there was talk that they were closing Chicago down, and one of the hardest things was I had to pull out of the driveway knowing I wasn't going to see my dad again. And but 2 weeks later, he passed away and couldn't even get a funeral. Thankfully, my brothers being in law enforcement, they were able to at least be there for the burial. But remember driving back, we drove straight through from Chicago back to Massachusetts, and it was eerie. The roads were desolate. It was almost like the movie Joyride. A car comes up behind you late at night and flashing their lights. And and as we kind of got introduced to it, that was, I think, probably was there before, but I think really the advent of telehealth, being able to get medical and psychiatric help in a modality very different from in person. And I think the pandemic, ironically, is a shared universal experience. It's not relegated to race, gender, sex, religion, ethnicity, political climate, which is a whole topic in and of itself. But the impact on mental health from the pandemic has been extraordinary. It was there prior, but the disconnectedness, disruption from our daily routine, of what, we didn't like being told what to do. In America, we're an Amazon society. We want it now. We want it yesterday. And I think this has forced a lot of people to look within themselves, families. If we just kind of stereotype and take this stereotypical family, dad gets up in the morning, goes to work, mom gets the kids ready, either stays home, goes to work, they come home, they have dinner. Now when people are forced to spend 24 hours a day with each other, I think a lot of people have started to realize things about themselves, realize things about their kids, not sure after the pandemic what the divorce rate's going to be, but when I do these podcasts, I don't really write a script. This is my, I've always been someone who was able to talk off the top of my head, but I did pull some statistics that I found were interesting. That a recent survey by the CDC found that 63% of individuals aged 18 to 24 are struggling with anxiety and depression, and 25% of that population has had an increase in substance use to cope with the stress. And another 25 have experienced or reported experiencing suicidal ideations. So the phone is ringing off the hook. The availability for providers or to get into a provider, whether that's for meds, for therapy, for testing, for the grace of God, we've been able in our profession to work through this. But people are losing it. People were losing it beforehand, but now we're so constricted. And to be honest, you don't know what to believe. We're very fortunate. Tomorrow we get our second dose of the Moderna vaccine. And, you know, I'm going to go back to start seeing patients in person at the office. I mean, been able to do it over telehealth. But it's really kind of turned the world upside down. And there's something in psychology called the diathesis stress model. And the diathesis stress model is the intersection and interaction between physiology and the environment. So when someone may have a genetic predisposition to a certain psychiatric disorder, when stress levels reach a certain point, it could actually mutate the gene and turn things on. And I think that's happening a lot. I'm diagnosing more and more cases of pediatric bipolar disorder, more cases of depression, PTSD, and people have been impacted, you know, losing loved ones. I mean, you probably have seen people outside of nursing homes and you can't visit family members. It's really just impacted all of us. And there was a psychologist, I remember his first name, his last name was Elkind, and he had a term that was called adolescent egocentrism. And that model applies really to anybody of any age. And it's basically, it's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to catch the coronavirus. I'm going to do what I want to do. And in the United States, you've seen there's been no uniformity. Blind faith in any type of leadership is dangerous. Blind faith in, I said this thing in there in the introduction, blind faith in anything is dangerous. So people don't know how to cope. Kids are struggling in school academically. I can tell you how many kids say I log in to Zoom. And then I go do what I want to do. I play my video games and I log out at 2:45. It's disrupted rites of passage, whether that's marriage, graduation, funerals, bar mitzvahs, a variety of things. And, you know, when I talked about, you know, not wanting to look, that we like looking in the carnival mirrors, not the real ones, this whole thing has forced us to look in the real mirror. And I think it's had a lot of positive benefits because with the advent of telehealth, the access to mental health has really afforded people opportunities that they may not otherwise have wanted to pursue. You can do it from the privacy of your own home in your pajamas, and the flexibility of scheduling also makes it more attractive to some extent. But I used to be able to get people in with my colleagues for therapy and meds. They got wait lists out the door. I try to get people in as soon as possible for psych and neuropsych evals, but it's surreal. But if you, from a professional perspective, I think it's given us time to maybe recalibrate. I mean, in America, we are a very broken society. We are very polarized to one or the other. You got multiple movements going on across the nation, simultaneously in the midst of a disease process that is foreign to everybody. Should I get the shot? Should I not get the shot? I mean, that creates anxiety in and of itself. So you know, for myself, you know, in terms of people who influenced my life, obviously my parents and my wife, but Bruce Springsteen has probably been the one constant in my life growing up as a small child. Independent of being a rock star, it is his prolific writing that has allowed me to understand myself better, understand psychiatric conditions better. I used to tease case conceptualization using the different characters in his songs. Love to meet him someday. Hopefully get the chance, because I think he has an incredible way of really explaining and intersecting the various components of the human condition. Now, I know my wife, from a psychiatric perspective in terms of medication, has also seen a huge influx. People are questioning, you know, everybody needs to be on a benzodiazepine. I need to increase my Ativan. I need to increase my Xanax, or my Prozac's not working. So there's a lot of confusion in all of this in terms of, you know, I don't think any of us went to school and learned pandemic therapy or pandemic prescribing. So my wife is here, and just want to get her perspective from a medication standpoint in terms of how she views the pandemic and its impact on mental health. So Julie?
Yeah, so pandemic medicine, I guess is how you can kind of phrase it. No one could have seen this coming. Definitely has affected providers, prescribers, and people in the general public. People who don't even struggle with mental illness per se are struggling with depression, anxiety, be it situational or be it organic. But the anxiety level has been so high, and when you're trying to treat a population during chaos and in the midst of fear, it has been, you know, it's taken a toll on providers too, because, and I even think that any provider, be it the people who are on the front lines, you know, we were able to do telehealth. We were lucky and blessed to be able to do that and be available to people, you know, our regular clients and then also new clients. Having telehealth was a godsend in the midst of total chaos. But you talk about the frontline workers and the people in the ICUs, the hospitals, the emergency rooms, and, you know, being physically exposed to a deadly virus and just with no control whatsoever, it created a lot of burnout, and a lot of providers need treatment.
I don't think we've even prepared for the aftermath of when the pandemic is over, what the residual effects are going to be.
Yeah, and I think we see it in, you know, of course, adults, the elderly, people who are isolated, the elderly who are very vulnerable, whether they're in a rehab nursing home setting, or people just stuck in their condominium or their apartment and feeling lonely and sharing buildings with other people and being exposed to COVID, and how isolating it's been. But I do think that, it's affected. I treat a lot of nurses, a lot of parents, a lot of adolescents. I don't treat children. I treat people who are grandparents, all across the board, police officers, you name it. And everyone was, no one ever had a sense of control during that entire time. I think the fallout is going to be a lot of PTSD. When you're in the midst of chaos and you're in the midst of crisis mode, you don't have time to think. You don't have time to feel. You just act. And I can say this, speak for this myself, in that there's no time to question anything. You're in critical thinking mode. You need to help people as much as you possibly can. I do think things have calmed down. But again, you know, talking to teachers who are been in the field for years in their careers, and they're not technically savvy, and they were being thrown into situations where, you know, every which way you looked, it was a like shitstorm intersection of, you know, teachers not knowing what the next step was, and it was just a very slow and it unfolded, and it was just so stressful for teachers, and it still is. And then you have kids who, what kind of learners are they? Can they actually learn over the internet, and the hybrid, and the what it's done to kids? You know, I think kids are resilient for the most part, but kids who struggle with, you know, mental illness, it makes it even that much more difficult. And parents having to teach their kids at home, parents losing their jobs because their kids are home and they need to be there and they need to help with their schooling. You know, I could go on and on. Everybody knows what I'm saying. It's just...
But what do you say from a medication standpoint? Do you say people are wanting more of a certain medication, or they're wanting additional meds?
Again, I mean, how much can you medicate a pandemic and in the culture and what was going on in our country at the time politically? And it was very, very difficult to navigate with medication, because it's like, okay, how much medication can I give you that's gonna numb you out? And unfortunately, you know, I think we did a pretty good job, just my cluster of my colleagues that we work very closely together, trying to keep people as stable as possible. But yes, people were in outright panic and terrified. And we didn't have the answers either. So it wasn't like we could say something to make somebody calm, to settle an irrational thought. Couldn't do it, because we didn't know the answer. And we felt it inside too. And we're trying to treat people with all the strength we have.
So you compact a pre-existing mental illness on top of a situational stressor that no one really knows what it is or what the outcome is or what the impact is. And again, I've always said it's all about perception, not just mean two people see the same thing, can have totally different interpretations of what may or may not be transpiring. Scary time, though. Not to diverge into a political diatribe, but previous president didn't do a good job. I'm sorry. You know, independent of what your personal or political view is, he's up there telling people to drink bleach, and people go out and do it. I mean, it's called groupthink, like lemmings to the sea. The pandemic, I think, as a citizen, was handled incredibly poorly, and there was so much misinformation because egos conflicted with science, and in the end, no matter what mankind does, Mother Nature always wins. So. Blind ignorance, like I said, blind faith is dangerous. If you're struggling with a mental health condition, please seek help. Talk to your primary care. Talk to your school nurse. Talk to your parents. Talk to each other. I mean, it's helped, you know, that my wife and I are in the same field. I don't necessarily do therapy in each other, but we have an understanding of this stuff. But I can't recall a recent patient that this topic hasn't come up in terms of how it's impacted their lives or how it's impacted somebody, which is kind of scary that, you know, like the, was it 3 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon? This is like the three degrees of separation from COVID.
Well, again, you're dealing with a deadly virus, and I don't want to linger here because I'm in a hopeful space right now, but you were dealing with a pandemic. It wasn't even just our country. It was the world. And there was nobody at the time that could actually speak to any kind of soothing or calming. And you're talking about leaders who weren't able to calm down their own people. So, you know, it was a very bizarre and unique experience. Do I think there's silver lining? There's always silver lining, right? That's because I'm spiritual, and I think that spirituality really helps people get better and cope better. Even though the pandemic, it was really like, wait, what? What's going on? It was hard to even draw spiritually in that at that time. But that people are... What was I going to say?
I think the whole thing is isolation. And that's a huge...
And fear.
Isolation, fear. Fear of a multitude of things. Fear of catching it. Fear of, should I get the vaccine? Should I not get the vaccine? Fear of what's going to happen to my loved ones because I can't see them. I mean, our worlds are so microscopic and myopic at this point. I mean, I go to the grocery store on Sundays. I get my hair cut on Wednesdays, and I pick up my prescriptions from Walgreens when they're ready. I haven't been back to the gym since March, although I'm a huge fan of the Peloton, and that's my new thing. So, again, you're getting free advertising out here. But the Peloton is awesome. So, anyhow, just from a professional standpoint and a personal standpoint, you know, with my father, I see the effects of how COVID impacted that. I couldn't even say goodbye to the person who meant the most to me in the world. Independent of just losing him, I wasn't even allowed the opportunity to say a final goodbye. But mental health is rampant at this point.
And also, I want to say something, too, that everybody also knows. It's when someone you love or cares about had to go into the hospital, and you had to leave them at the door at the emergency room, and you could not happen to us personally. You cannot. It was horrible for people. These people are suffering, you know, with whether they're okay or not. People's kids are in the hospital, loved ones, parents, you name it. And they could not, the people in the hospital couldn't access their family, which is what do you need the most when you are in that kind of position. And
I'll give you a personal example of what we experienced. I'm not that old, but I had my hip replaced about 2.5 years ago. I need my other one replaced from years of sports. And so I auditioned to my, you know, blood pressure medication, whatnot. I was taking 2 Advil every morning. And so I'm a cardiologist, got my blood tests, and he's like, yeah, your kidney function is a little off. I've never had that before. He's like, so stop, you know, stop. I think I stopped my Crestor. And he's like, you take anything else? I'm like, yeah, but taking 2 Advil. He's like, stop the Advil. So I had to go back and get an x-ray of my liver and kidneys, and my wife went with me, and we drove, got back to Duxbury, where we live. We were going to make Caprese paninis that night. I remember walking out of the grocery store. The cardiologist calls me. He says, you need to get to the hospital. You're in kidney failure. I had no symptoms whatsoever. I was like, what's going on? He's like, you got to get to the hospital right away. So we drove back home, packed a little bag, got my, you know, phone cords and everything, my iPhone and whatnot, and drove to the hospital. And I remember Julie being with me, wheeling me in to the emergency room and them saying, you can't come in. And, you know, my area of expertise is psychiatry, psychology, the brain, you know, the kidneys, liver, not necessarily my area. And my go-to person, my wife, who is, you know, different medical training, I'm sitting there and I have no access to a loved one. And it was scary. I didn't know what was going on. I remember getting the COVID test, and the woman's like, this is going to hurt a little bit. I'm like, how bad could this be? Thought she was pulling out my orbital socket. She dug the Q-tip up my nose. But on a personal, I felt so disconnected from a loved one, and it was just an eerie experience. And thank God my cardiologist caught it, because I would have been dead in 3 days with no symptoms. But, you know, not to make it a, you know,
make it about you,
not to make it about me, but just feeling that disconnectedness, I was scared.
Well, I think I was scared too. And I, again, not making it about us, but just to show you how human we are, that anybody who has had that experience, it helped me to understand people better who lost a loved one that they couldn't go to.
Oh, definitely.
To honor them at a funeral, which is, you know, everyone deserves that. But this is, it was an eerie time. So we understand on various levels what the experience was for a lot of people out there.
And we also understand the prevalence rates, the exacerbation in pre-existing conditions, the manifestation of new symptoms, of new conditions of mental health, mental illness. So please do not be hesitant to reach out for help. Again, talk to your kids, talk to your spouse, talk to your partner, talk to anybody.
Talk to your primary care if you don't have a psychiatric provider. Talk to your primary care very openly about how you're feeling. Self-care is 100% what you need to do. Take care of yourself, meditate, pray, try to stay grateful. There's so many things that are left that we have to be grateful for. And I think that that's the silver lining, in that people appreciate their families more. They appreciate the time together. They appreciate the friendships that they had where they could visit and have dinner or go out to dinner and do all those things we took advantage of.
And the small things we take for granted.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
You know, being able to go out to dinner, being able to interact with family,
being able to friends.
I mean, it impacts us as just people.
Yeah.
It does. So hopefully this, you know, we were able to shed some light on our perspective in terms of mental health during the pandemic. As always, feel free to reach out, as you guys have been doing. I appreciate it very much. We'll get back into personality disorders. I've got a couple of guest speakers that'll be coming on, talk about various topics like trauma, self-injurious behaviors, a variety of things, because there's no end in topics in this field. That's what makes it fun. That's what makes it enjoyable. I look forward to doing this every week. And hopefully we are impacting people in a positive way. So feel free to get in contact with me through Psychology Today, Psychology Unplugged at Outlook.com. And different quote this time, take care of yourselves and take care of others. Until next time, be well, everyone.